Today on Seculo, an IRS agent was stopped from investigating dad in the Biden probe. We'll talk about that more today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hi, welcome to Seculo. We're taking your calls 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. There's been some shocking testimony provided by a current IRS official who is named and one IRS official who's not named. The IRS official who is named has been testifying about how the U.S. attorney, David Weiss, who was handling for 5 years the investigation into Hunter Biden, the tax issues, the foreign money, and ultimately it came down to a $1.5 million tax that he owed and a gun charge because he was using illegal drugs when he applied to purchase a weapon for his background check, and that would be a felony. So it's pretty much the plea deal would be a slap on the wrist. But now we're learning, like, because people ask questions like, what about, you know, we're seeing all these WhatsApp messages now about getting $10 million. You better return my call right now. The chairman of the company, the Chinese bank, who is now missing, by the way, in China. No one has been able to find for a couple of years. You know, you better call me back or else we hold a grudge. I'm sitting next to my father. Why did all of this go? Why did none of this appear ultimately in any of the cases or even the prep for the cases before the plea deal? Well, now we're learning that the U.S. attorney, David Weiss, one, sought special counsel status so he could bring charges in any jurisdiction in the U.S. He was denied that status by the Department of Justice. Right. He also tried to bring charges in D.C. and Southern California and was denied by the local U.S. attorneys there.
This is despite the fact that the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, said that he gave him full access to bring charges anywhere. Do we have that soundbite? Let's play it.
Mr. Weiss was appointed by President Trump as the U.S. Attorney in Delaware and assigned this matter during the previous administration, would be permitted to continue his investigation and to make a decision to prosecute any way in which he wanted to and in any district in which he wanted to.
Okay, so someone's not telling the truth, either the U.S. Attorney, Weiss, or the Attorney General. If it is the Attorney General that is not telling the truth, we have a very significant issue that's developing here right now.
Kevin McCarthy is talking seriously about impeachment.
Well,
and said if they can corroborate with the U.S. Attorney David Weiss what this IRS, who's still there at the IRS, the supervisory agent Gary Shapley, he used whistleblower status to be protected from retribution at the IRS, so he can't be fired. And there's another IRS agent who just hasn't want to be named yet, who's testified as well, who's corroborated this. So there's two of them. He's also named names about people that were in the meeting.
Correct.
With David Weiss. And McCarthy said, you know, if this is true, this is how you would move. This is why we have impeachment for executive branch confirmed officials. And it would be Merrick Garland who would be at the forefront of that because of the statement you just made.
Well, this is a big deal. I mean, either he had the authority to do whatever he needed, like a special counsel would. They still have to report to the Department of Justice. Or he didn't. Well, he was denied special counsel status. So that's number one. But he was also denied the ability to bring cases in other jurisdictions because you have to bring the case where the crime was committed. Now, what's also interesting about that, couple that with the IRS agent, who is the special agent in charge, saying, hey, they wouldn't let us continue statute of limitations. They limited the amount of investigations we could do. This is very serious. And this is where congressional oversight, and we will work with Congress, is very important. I'm a tax lawyer by training. Very, very important.
The two cases that would have been brought were the money from China. That would have been Southern California because Hunter Biden was living there at the time when that money was received. And then the Burisma money would have been D.C. at the time because Biden was vice president and that's where Hunter Biden was. So, and then both of those jurisdictions, he was denied the ability to bring charges. So he wanted to bring charges, is what the IRS agent who testified under the whistleblower says. Let's take your calls on this. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. This is why the plea deal, by the way, has not been agreed to yet by the judge. That's not until July 26th. There's a hearing on that. So things could change for Hunter Biden. We'll be right back on Seculo. Secchio, we are taking calls this to 1-800-684-3110. So a IRS whistleblower appeared on CBS News this morning. He's a supervisory agent, Gary Shapley. And there's another IRS official who, as well, who has not been named yet, but who's testified. He also said, by the way, that in the meeting, when they were told about not being able to bring charges outside of Delaware by U.S. Attorney David Weiss, there were these officials, the Baltimore FBI Special Agent in Charge, Tom Sobozinski, Assistant Special Agent in Charge, Raisha Holly, as well as Shapley, and his boss, IRS Special Agent in Charge, Daryl Walden. So now we have specific names of people to haul before the committee, not necessarily in a negative way, but just to say, was this what you heard? Did you hear what Shapley heard? Did you hear David Weiss clearly communicate to you that he was denied the ability to bring charges outside of Delaware, which limits his ability? It kind of explains why this tax issue was only over $1.5 million in just unpaid taxes, not in money that wasn't necessarily reported. That would have been the Burisma money that would have been linked more to a D.C. case, the Chinese money, which would have been linked to a Southern California case. And what is being reported is that he was denied the ability. He wanted to bring charges there and was denied. Now, my question is, after that statement made by Merrick Garland, David Weiss knows that statement. Wouldn't it have been his responsibility to speak up about this?
Well, he's handling an ongoing investigation, though. So his complication is he could have handled it internally within the Justice Department. Bringing it public, let's say as a whistleblower, would be more difficult because he's the prosecuting attorney in charge. It puts him in a very difficult spot. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the situations he's in.
The entire DOJ against him.
The entire DOJ against him and the White House against him. So he's in a tough spot. But now it's going to come out. So now what you're saying, yes, he's going to have to make an affirmative statement. If the Republicans, conservatives on the Hill play this correctly, and when I say play it, do it right, this could have major repercussions going into, by the way, the 2024 election. It could significantly hurt Joe Biden legally. It puts him on par with kind of the legal issues that Donald Trump's facing.
Yeah,
it's that kind of problem.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. The difference is that Donald Trump actually has to go to court and defend himself, and Joe Biden doesn't.
By the way, I'm hearing the trial could be as early as, for sure, January or February.
That's what the DOJ requested.
DOJ requested December.
Yeah, December.
December 11th, December. But that'll run into Christmas. The trial is estimated to be 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know if it's going to happen before or not. If it does happen before, or if it doesn't happen before and happens after, they got to get a full defense team in place.
Yeah, I think that's
because they're going to come after him with the entire power of the federal government. And you and I know more than most lawyers know in America what that's like, because we did it for a president. Yep. But he's not the sitting president anymore, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah, we're going to take your calls now, 1-800-684-3110. In the next segment, Mike Pompeo is going to be joining us about what is happening in Russia. So the former Secretary of State is going to weigh in on that and kind of help us, because people are saying, you know, this is not over yet with Wagner. We've heard more out of Belarus as well. And supposedly this deal that Lukashenko cut, which the way he described the way he talked to Putin would not be the way you would imagine the Belarus dictator being able to talk to Putin and being able to cut this deal. So it's a lot of questions in the air still about what will happen to Wagner, to the head of Wagner, and of course how this affects more broadly, the war in Ukraine. But I want to take your calls on this, too. If you got questions about it, give us a call at 1-800-684-3110, because there's a lot of moving parts here.
Tons.
Multiple districts. You got a plea deal that's sitting there for another month, a little bit less than a month. And all the talk, there's even calls in the Wall Street Journal today for the judge to reject the plea deal in light of all the new information that has come out, just in the WhatsApp message alone, where it says, you know, that you better call us right now. Where's your call? If you don't come through with the $10 million, we're going to hold this grudge. We know how to hold grudges. I'm sitting next to my father. That's when he was Vice President of the United States. And the whole deal that, you know, Biden's also on the record saying he knew nothing about these deals. But his son, we don't know if he was really sitting next to his dad. We don't know that. He could have just been using that in a text to sound tougher. But it certainly brings a question of, like, how would you not know these deals were going on? Let's go to Susan in Kentucky on line one. Hey, Susan.
Hello. Glad to finally get through. And thank you. God bless you guys for all the hard work. I'm just calling with a little sarcasm on Hunter Biden. I'm amazed to think about how he has been receiving millions of dollars from all these foreign countries, and how he has been evading his taxes, and he's a deadbeat dad and can't pay child support. And so I'm thinking, if I just don't understand. If he is still a crack addict, he must be buying a lot of crack with all that money.
I think he is recovered. I don't want to go. Look, talking about the legal issues is one thing. I'm not going to go into his health status. I hope he's not in that situation. It doesn't appear to be. It's going to be by the way, that was going to be a defense, because criminal intent is impaired by drug dependency and disability. So that's just the way the law is set up. But I think it's worth playing, going back a step, and playing with the whistleblower. Yep. From the IRS said, when questioned, take a listen.
There are certain investigative steps that we weren't allowed to take that could have led us to President Biden.
And you wanted to take them?
We needed to take them.
And you weren't allowed to take them?
That's correct.
Okay, now this is the IRS agent that was in charge of the putting together the criminal case against Hunter Biden. Now, let me tell you what that he's a special agent. That's an IRS criminal agent. Yeah. He was a supervisory agent, means he's in charge of a group. They're called, in the civil context, a group manager. So he's high up within that, within the field offices, within the division. Here's the problem with all of this. You got to couple this with what the U.S. attorney's now saying, that he was stymied. He was stopped, not allowed to issue subpoenas and document requests and bring charges in the District of Columbia and in California. They would not allow it. That is markedly different from what Merrick Garland under oath said he gave as the parameters for the U.S. Attorney Weiss to engage. Very, very different.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is we've heard over and over again from the Attorney General in so many different settings that David Weiss can do whatever he needs to do. That's why we kept him on for the Trump administration. They made that political move that, hey, we're not going to get rid of this Trump-appointed U.S. attorney in Delaware. We're going to let him keep going in this multi-year investigation, which had already started under the Trump administration. Now it lasted 5 years. He did say, which was interesting, and maybe there was more to it than originally thought, because he did say when he brought these charges against Hunter in Delaware that they weren't closing out the investigation.
Yeah.
Now, you said in normal times, that's kind of what you say. But in this case, now that we're learning this, maybe it meant more.
It may, because it is a normal thing they say. They say, subject to getting additional information, the case will remain open.
I mean, there's WhatsApp messages and all these things that they didn't necessarily.
How did they not have those?
We don't know if they didn't have them or if they couldn't act on them because they weren't the right jurisdiction to act.
That's just so.
The Chinese jurisdiction would have been Southern California or D.C.
It's just so unusual that the Attorney General of the United States.
I don't think they were that limited by district court, honestly.
No, but the fact that he went out to the
Delaware, money would probably end up in Delaware.
Yeah, but the fact that he would not allowed to do this when the Attorney General says specifically the opposite. And now Kevin McCarthy is upped the rhetoric.
To impeachment.
Yeah, let's listen.
Because of the allegations from the IRS, right, because of the whistleblowers and the DOJ, our Garland, what he is saying and what David Weiss are saying privately are two different things.
Right.
And if it comes true what the IRS whistleblower is saying, we're going to start impeachment inquiries on the Attorney General.
Well, that's a big statement again. Now, whether they have enough to get a conviction? Probably not, because you need 66. They're not going to get that. But does this... Listen, I think Merrick Garland has to be asked. He should be brought back up to the Hill and asked, without a lot of hullabaloo and without a lot of grandstanding, Mr. Attorney General, did you receive, and your office received through probably the DAG, the Deputy Attorney General, did you receive a request from the U.S. Attorney to expand the reach of where he wanted to go with his investigation to the district in the District of Columbia and into California? And if he says, no, he did not, well, then you got to bring the U.S. attorney in. If he says yes, and he says, we did not allow that because he gave a reason, you say, well, that's exactly the opposite of what you told us in sworn testimony.
Yeah, the TID held by H for the big guy, the shorthand for 10%, the IRS agent was told not to look into those money trails. Anything involving dad or the big guy were blocked by a senior prosecutor in the Weiss office. Now, that's another move. Why would he have kept that senior prosecutor on? Did he not know? I mean, how many senior prosecutors would a U.S. attorney have in this kind of case? Senior.
Probably two.
Okay, if that guy's going around blocking...
I mean, there could be 10
But if that guy's going around blocking his investigations, why would he not? He had the power to fire him, or at least remove him from the office.
But they didn't.
So there's a lot of questions for Weiss here. A lot.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like, I don't want to just
but
say.
But he's getting it out there somehow.
Through these whistleblowers.
Yeah.
Who are saying, like, I was in the meeting with him, and I was shocked when he said, look, guys, all I could do is bring cases that we could bring in Delaware, or else they're going to beat us jurisdictionally in court. So we can't bring D.C., can't bring California, and those are the big cases. And by the way, it's the IRS agents, don't even investigate.
You realize what you just said?
Yeah.
They stopped an investigation of the president's son? If this turns out to be true, folks, okay, this would be a real problem for Joe Biden. It just can.
It's, even with Democrats.
Yes, I think so. And then,
his popularity.
But you know,
Democrats.
We'll talk about that in the next part. But I want to ask you that question about the politics of it.
Welcome back to Secular. Listen, keep getting your calls in on all this Hunter Biden news and the whistleblower, because I know it's complicated. You've got all these different district courts and different U.S. attorneys and prosecutors weighing in on this, lots of names. So if you got questions about it, get them in now, 1-800-684-3110. But I do want to turn to what's happening in Russia. I'm really excited to have a former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, joining us, because I wanted to get his insight into everything that happened over the weekend. Secretary Pompeo, we saw the Wagner Group march on Moscow, then abruptly abandoned their march on Moscow with a deal that allowed the head of the Wagner Group to go to Belarus. It was supposedly brokered by Lukashenko of Belarus, which had people kind of scratch their heads. And how does he kind of have this much power to broker anything with Putin on his own? So looking at this with your background, what was going through your mind when this all started unfolding? It was very quick over the weekend.
Jordan, it's great to be with you again today. You know, when I first saw Prigozhin start to move, it reminded me of my time when I was in the administration and Prigozhin's forces in Syria started to move against the Americans, and we killed some 300 of the Wagner soldiers that day. And we thought it was irrational, right? It was in Syria, he was crossing the river. He knew we had to know. And I remember thinking when Prigozhin's forces were on the move, you could watch it on TV, thinking he's made a mistake again, right? Very unlikely that forces are going to gather, permitting him to take Vladimir Putin out, or for that matter, even to gain leverage to get rid of his nemesis, the Ministry of Defense leader Shoigu and Gerasimov. And so I remember thinking this is almost certainly to end badly for Prigozhin and his forces. And of course, within, I don't know, 30 hours or so, they turned around. Prigozhin is now telling a story. I think there's still a lot we don't know, but I don't think there's any doubt that Prigozhin viewed himself as having crawled too far out on the limb, kind of in the same way some of the Chinese business leaders did. And Putin was attempting to rein him back in, and he saw this as his last-ditch effort to protect himself. And, of course, it didn't end that way.
Mike, I always look at these things, and we've done a lot of work in Russia. We had an office in Moscow on religious liberty issues throughout the entire country in the former Soviet bloc. I mean, our lawyers there litigated cases at the European courts on religious liberty and religious freedom and did a great job. But, of course, we can't do that now with the sanctions in place. But I was going to ask you this question. I always look at the Russian situation, and you got to think it's like the Middle East. You got to think nine-dimensionally. It's like a nine-dimensional chess game. It's hard for me to believe that Putin didn't know a lot of this was happening and that he may have been moving the players around here a bit. Could this be an exit or attempted exit ramp out of Ukraine? Because now he's got the Wagner troops not allegedly willing to fight, and he's got a domestic situation, and he says, you know what, I got to concentrate on home. I'm total speculation on my part.
Jay, your point about the fact that we should all be quite humble in believing we actually know what's going on inside the Russian leadership circles is precisely right. Jay, I think it's unlikely that Putin's viewing this as his exit. In some ways, that would be just a glorious outcome, right? A Ukrainian success story there would be a fantastic outcome. Without the use of nuclear weapons, without American soldiers, that'd be fantastic. I think more likely is that Putin actually believes that he now has to tighten down things inside his own country even more, but has to keep the failed mission in Ukraine alive, or there's too much confidence lost in him. So my guess is you'll see more tanks inside of Russia. You'll see bigger domestic security forces. And you will see a continued effort to mobilize even more Russians in the fight in Ukraine. This is a dangerous place for Putin to go, but his desire to stay in power has, as you know, Jay, that's always rule number one, keep the guy in charge. And I think you'll see him clamp down at home and continue to try and exert his capacity to at least tell the story of continued fighting in Ukraine. So I'm hopeful the Ukrainians will see the opportunity here and be able to make gains, further putting pressure on Vladimir Putin.
We know, for instance, the Wagner troops are in Haiti. We know they're on the continent of Africa. They've been deployed, as you said, in Syria. The lack of their ability to be deployed now in the Ukraine situation with Russia in that conflict, what does that do for Putin or do to Putin?
It's hard to know. We hear conflicting stories about where these soldiers, heard different numbers. So it sounds like somewhere in the range of 25,000 or 30,000, where they're going to go. And remember this too, though, Jay, that the logistics and the money were all coming from the Kremlin. So Putin always had an enormous amount of leverage on Prigozhin, the leader of Wagner. Prigozhin had some leverage too, and he tried to exert it. But in the end, money matters, logistics matter. Prigozhin was clearly being pushed in ways that he didn't want to be pushed, and now he's been exiled. We'll have to see where the troops all land, but make no mistake about it, there will still be private Russian forces, whether they go under the name Wagner Force. Putin will still see that as a global instrument of power, and he'll find someone who he trusts for a period of time to go lead those forces wherever he needs them to keep Russian influence strong around the world.
I wanted to go to your new piece up at ACLJ.org, and we'll keep following, of course, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine very closely with this as it all continues to unfold day by day and minute by minute. But you have a new piece up at ACLJ.org that Biden's sanction relief for the Iranian regime will fuel murder, mayhem, and terror. This might actually surprise people, but we now know that the U.S. and Iran have re-entered indirect talks to try and come up with another or get back into the nuclear deal, of course, getting close to election time as well.
It's incomprehensible to me that this is just the zombie thing that won't go away. You know, there may be some politics in this. This could be the Biden administration looking for a win, a story to tell the American people about a foreign success. I think that dog won't hunt, but it may be they believe it. I think more likely they've always had this ideological view, this almost religious fanaticism that says we need to cut a deal with the Iranians to keep peace in the Middle East. We proved, Jordan, that wasn't true. When the Abraham Accords came into being, we proved that supporting our Sunni friends, the Gulf state friends, our Shia friends around the world who wanted peace and not terror like the Ayatollah does. And, you know, all of this taking place against the backdrop of Iranian weapons being handed, sold, traded to the Russians to kill Ukrainian kids while we're in that fight, too. It makes no sense as a matter of logic to me, but it is very clear the Biden administration remains intent on some kind of deal which will enrich the Ayatollah and create enormous risk for the United States and for our ally and friend Israel as well.
More about that in the weeks ahead, and look forward to your continued comments and appreciate your work with us and your work around the globe. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we encourage people to go see that new piece up from Secretary Pompeo at ACLJ.org. It's exclusive to ACLJ, and that's part of the pieces that Secretary Pompeo does at Senior Council for Global Affairs. The ACLJ is these exclusive pieces for our site. And again, it's Biden's sanction relief for the Iranian regime will fuel murder, mayhem, and terror. It's honestly not getting as much attention as it should that we're back in these indirect talks with and again, it's an administration that seems like on every foreign policy decision, it's been a failure after failure after failure, starting with the withdrawal in Afghanistan.
Secretary Gates said Joe Biden's on the wrong side of every foreign policy decision. Let me say this, though, as we go into the second half hour of the broadcast. Your support of the ACLJ is critical, and this was a great example of it today, because on all these issues that we've discussed that are in the news, that you're getting commentary from the lawyers that handled the similar situation or handled the situation, we also have our government oversight project with our Freedom of Information Act litigation. We get the answers to these questions. We hold people accountable. Then you just heard from Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, Director of the CIA, to give you real firsthand impressions of what's going on. This happens because you support the work of the ACLJ and so many other issues that we don't have time to talk about every day in this 1 hour, including this broadcast being presented to you 5 days a week. So I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. You go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org, and make your online contribution there. It's a great way to stay engaged and in tune. We appreciate that. Stay tuned. We got a great half hour coming up. A lot more information. If you're watching on our social media, share it with your friends. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We do want to encourage you to call in 1-800-684-3110 as we walk through the latest in the Hunter Biden. I mean, it just continues. It's when you think that Can't even it when up. It's done, and you may have been unhappy about how it looked like it was done with the ultimate plea deal that's been put forward out of the federal case in Delaware. Now there's a call for the judge not to accept the plea deal because of all this new information we're learning literally in the past like 24 and 48 hours from IRS whistleblowers. And what's interesting about this one, that unlike a lot of times where we don't get names, we don't get people, and they're behind the scenes, closed door testimony, and sometimes they don't ultimately go forward or it's allegations. This whistleblower who is named is willing to go out publicly. He's got the protection, so he can't be fired.
Right.
He's got, you know, he's a senior IRS official. And there was another official who wouldn't go with their name, but we do have a named person. He's naming names. He's saying, I wasn't the only person in the meeting. Here's the other five people who were in the meeting when we were told by the U.S. attorney, I can't bring charges outside Delaware.
So there, a narrative has been created in the press. Let's get your point on this, Logan. So narrative has been created in the press that we are letting this U.S. attorney out of Delaware operate independently. He will bring charges where he needs to bring charges. He's in control. That is completely being destroyed, that whole premise. And I noticed, we talked about this in our meeting before, CBS News. I mean, it's starting to affect what we would call the legacy mainstream media, where they're having to cover this now.
Yeah, I think covering it is one thing. Giving the truth will be the other, or at least giving their version of the truth. I think there is some of this where there are some journalists who feel like, honestly, just a pop ratings to continue to have people watch. They can't be as biased as they once were. We've seen that, but they tried that at CNN, and what happened? A big flop, and you know, Chris Licht gets fired, and they have to restart once again, and now are likely up for sale. So we'll see what happens, but I think a lot of people know they have to try in the media to cover these stories because they are some of the biggest stories. Like I told you this morning, we started talking. It's like, man, I would love to never talk about Hunter Biden ever again. I would love that to not, but unfortunately, it's just not the world we live in.
Yeah, and then there's the political side of this too.
I mean, it's like they kind of throw it in our face with the state dinner with the Indian Prime Minister.
No.
He's
front
and center while he's pleading to federal. I mean, he's still admitting to federal charges, criminal charges,
right.
And they're putting him right back in the room to make deals with Indian businessmen.
Right. So here's the question I was going to ask you before the break, and that was, how much of this could be the Democrats letting this happen to weaken Joe Biden so they can get somebody else in there?
We definitely know that a lot of grassroots Democrats, well, that's not the party officials, but people who actually are, you know, the ones who volunteer and are kind of the Democrat base, are 60% want him out. They want him gone. They want him to just say, I'm not going to run again. That gets very questionable about who would be next. I think it would definitely be Harris. I don't think there's any doubt. I think there's way too many different reasons why they would have a very difficult job bypassing her, unless she jumped out too, unless they were able to move her out of the way as well, and she did it voluntarily. But I do think Logan's right. Do they let this all come out now while the Trump stuff's coming out too, and then by the time you actually get to the election,
it's all about timing. And really, when you really look at it, for them, there's no one really running against Joe Biden as much as people want to say there is. There's really no one at this point who could do some pending, you know, for really, I'd say for Trump or for Biden, pending something catastrophic, like medically, I'd say, you know, like something like that, which you obviously don't hope for, but there's very little that can derail either of them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the most negative news for Ron DeSantis I've seen lately has been multiple news outlets, left, right, mainstream, just saying he's stalled.
He's just another one that we're kind of pulling out of the full coverage. I think that's true too, is when you think about some of those top candidates, they send people on the trail. It's very expensive. Those decisions start to have
you
to be made
your chance
in the next
shake
month.
Hands, and there were a lot of reports he wasn't good at shaking hands.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I mean, that it'll be interesting to see that. Again, a lot can happen. They're older candidates. They've got criminal charges against them or their families. I mean, it's a kind of unique time because the two leading candidates have a lot of stuff going on outside of just running for office or being president of the United States even. A lot of drama surrounding them. I mean, likely President Trump could be indicted a couple more times.
I mean, you got the Georgia is going to be August.
And maybe again in D.C.
And D.C. could be as early as this month coming up, July.
I mean, so we're talking like in the next few weeks.
I was talking to a friend of mine, a friend of yours, a lawyer, was involved in this with us, and he said this is unbelievable.
It's a full onslaught.
It is unreal. And they they have unleashed the whirlwind.
We'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Joanne in Ohio on line one. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, guys. I hope everyone is well today. I have two questions. First of all, this, I don't know who she is, this U.S. attorney, or is she an IRS attorney? I don't know who she is, who's telling them that they can't talk to anybody that was mentioned the big guy.
That was the U.S. attorney who's assigned to the case in Delaware, was a Trump appointee, actually, who had the case before the election. They let him stay. And he was told by officials at Maine Justice, that's the Department of Justice headquarters in Washington, that he did not have the ability to go into California or the District of Columbia in the investigation. Go ahead and continue. I just wanted to clarify that. His name is Weiss.
That I was told. There was a female attorney who told them they couldn't ask any questions that would lead to Joe Biden.
They did limit the inquiry of the questions.
He was limited. So he was told that he could not look into money trails that involved dad of the big guy by a senior prosecutor. That might be who you're talking about, working for Weiss. So one of the senior prosecutors for Weiss stepped into the IRS agents and said, don't go there.
Here's the question you got to ask yourself.
That's what he's alleging.
With all of these, you've got to ask yourself this question. Can the American people take, Logan, from a media standpoint, all of this information coming in on both Biden and on Trump, and it's unrelenting, and it's every day.
It's frustrating to the callers. It's a frustrating amount of info every single day.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who don't pay attention anymore, who do tune out. You've seen numbers slip on the news. You've seen all of this happen, and a lot of it is not just because they don't like the channel or they've moved on. A lot of it's fatigue. They're fatigued with the amount of content. You've had 6 years, 8 years almost now, of Donald Trump negative press. There is a fatigue that comes out of it. Eventually, you stop watching things that only feed you negativity. And I think that that's going to be part of this. Is that, yes, can the American people take it? Yeah, because eventually they'll turn it off. And I think that's the truth. If you really want to look at it, eventually people will turn off the TV. They will turn off their radio. They will quit watching videos online because eventually they get sick of it and until it's really time. And really when it's going to be time now, it's looking like November of 2024 because it seems like we are, three or four weeks away from a debate that's likely not going to matter, primaries that likely are not going to matter, and then you're going to roll into an election, a general election, when we already know who's going to be there. So why are people going to care until next fall?
Is the debate going to matter? You got an August debate is the first Republican primary debate.
No. Because by the time, again, you've got multiple chances to go in these debates. And I think if you're ahead by 60% and they're going to tell you got to be on a stage with nine people, you say, you're crazy. Maybe I'll be on stage with four. But I'm not going on a stage with a guy who's at 1%.
But they did that before, didn't they? When they split them up, they had the two-tier debates?
Yeah, but that's because they were 18.
And then some people moved up,
and
some people
went down. Democrats agreed to that. The DNC, in their rules, agreed to that. What are the Republicans agreeing to?
We had crazy debates. Remember, there were 12 on the main stage, 6 on the second stage.
You think that's meaningless for people?
Well, because you talk for 2 minutes. And then if you're Donald Trump, all you do is get attacked. And then the honest truth is, he kind of made a name for himself in those early ones. But I think then he realized, I did it. I took them all out. What his position is right now politically is that no one is a threat to me in this nomination, so I'm not going to let them talk to me. He's not going to have Ron DeSantis allowed the chance to even throw a punch at him.
And will there even be general election debates? Probably not. Also, right?
Those are off.
They may not.
Yeah, because the RNC's pulled out of the...
Because if you look at what probably really started to derail the last election meeting is some of those first debates that kind of went crazy. The first general election debates, the Trump-Biden debates, the first ones, we all can go back to it and go, well, that was an insane time in America watching that. They know that that's not good. Well, that's not positive for either of them.
I think that, Bret Baier had the chance to interview Donald Trump before this debate, knowing he was going to be the moderator. And he spent 20 minutes of his questioning, asking the same question about the documents, didn't talk at all about issues. So then if you're Donald Trump, you think, okay, is this what they're going to do to me when I show up in August? They're just going to talk about my cases. They're not going to talk about actually what I do, what I did as president and what I plan to do as president. We're just going to be talking about my legal woes while you're going to ignore that, any other people's problems, and just let them come punch me. Yeah. But obviously, if Donald Trump's not at that debate, guess how many people are watching it?
I know. And to me, that's such a bummer because I honestly think that there's people on that stage I really would love to hear from in that kind of setting. With having to debate someone like a President Trump. So not only Ron DeSantis, I'm talking about people that are in this that could have a potential next time or in the cabinet or later on. I'd love to hear from a Tim Scott. I'd love to hear from people on a different kind of platform. The debate platform is always fun to watch as a fan, if you will. But now, when you Trump didn't do all of the original ones. Right. He backed out of a few. Yeah, so we'll see. You'd think the Fox News one would be the one to do.
Except that
he's angry at Fox.
Yeah, very. He's having a public war with them. And he knows he can hurt their ratings.
But he showed up at CNN and did the town hall. You know, I don't know.
To prove a point.
Yeah.
I could take on CNN and destroy them.
Yeah. Well, I would love for him to show up and try to do the same.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fans' reaction, if you're the consultant and you're really looking at it, you're saying, you know what? I kind of like the fact that DeSantis has to like talk to this. He never even gets a chance to talk you or shake your hand.
Yeah.
You don't give DeSantis the opportunity to even take a punch at you.
Let me change gears for a moment here, because we've got something going on at the ACLJ we want to talk to you about, and that is, you know, what goes on at the UN and these other agencies as it relates to Israel, we've told you for years, is very, very troubling. More anti-Israel resolutions are passed than any other country. Some years, if you added all the resolutions condemning a country and added them all together and then looked at the number that were against Israel, Israel would have more. And we're talking about major issues. President Biden, in our view, continues to fund, and we got a FOIA out on this, the Palestinian Authority. This is the same Palestinian Authority that threatens out all-out war on Israel any day. It's the same Palestinian Authority that subsidizes terrorists who kill innocent Israelis and, for that matter, unfortunately, American civilians and tourists on a regular basis. Now, President Biden's re-entering into, and this is shocking again, would be the most to funding the most anti-Israel agency, and that is UNESCO. That's the United Nations Economic Social Welfare Organization. And this is what the Biden administration wants to put down as the marker. And this is where we are going to get involved and find out who authorized this, what were you thinking, and why did you do it? Last time we did this, by the way, we found out money was going to Mahmoud Abbas's son from your taxpayer dollars. Jordan?
Yeah. I mean, this, again, is why you've got to get activated here. We've got the FOIA in to find out exactly what is going on. We already have a restriction to fund to in our laws, in the U.S. law, not to fund the organizations that move forward this way. So what is the workaround? The workaround is that Nancy Pelosi was able to pass a piece of legislation that said you can go around that. And here's how they did it. It was very interesting. If being part of the committee at the UN helps us combat China's influence. So they're going to sell it as we can't ignore this committee because we've got to combat China. And the truth is, you could combat China without funding this committee.
Well, here's the other aspect of this.
You don't have to
this.
Fund it. I mean, we fund enough of the UN to combat China. We're the number one funder of the UN. So yes, we can combat China everywhere else. We don't have to give our money over to these committees that are intentionally taking provocative steps.
So the Biden administration also authorized the boycotting of the Judea and Samaria, the portions of Israel, and will not allow co-scientific research here, which is really insane, but that's what he's doing. He put anti-Israel board members on the Holocaust Memorial Board for the Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C., and now they're rejoining UNESCO. So we want you to take direct action on this. We have an email that is out today and a petition we want you to sign at aclj.org. And Logan, when people sign these petitions, they really have a big impact. And our website is set up to take care of this very quickly. And if you're not getting these emails, Logan can also let you know how you can get those.
Yeah, an easy way to do it would be to sign a petition. Then you'll get added to our email list. You'll see the little checkbox to be added. And you'll get these information. But yeah, they're on the front page of our website. They're very easy to sign. You can read the full petition, sign, or just quickly put in, I think, your first name, last name, email, and zip code. And you can quickly sign the petition. You can also do that on our app. But you can get involved in these and see the impact. And you can do that by going to aclj.org, playing around, seeing all the great content that's put up there. Not just video content, text content, social media content, articles, and daily videos, and this radio show and this broadcast. You can find all of it at aclj.org. So I encourage you to not only go there and support the work, donate, but also to sign a petition and get involved.
And if people want to start following us on social media, if you haven't already, and we have a big social media presence, what do they need to do? It's important for people to understand that.
Yeah, whatever you're on, whatever platform you're watching or you'd like to get involved in, we're there pretty much. So if you're on Twitter, if you're on Instagram or Facebook, you can just look for Jay Sekulow, ACLJ, Jordan Sekulow. You can find all the different pages, all the different accounts, and just do whatever your preferred is, whether that's a follow or a subscribe or put a notification bell on. Those are the things you need to do. Great YouTube content, great Rumble content. that's put up each and every day. So we have an incredible team, an incredible media team, unlike any other. And you can find that at aclj.org, or again, just go into our individual social media accounts. And if you're on one of those right now, if you're new to the broadcast and you're new to seeing this show right now on one of those social media platforms, I encourage you, whatever it is. So if it's on Rumble, follow. If it's on YouTube, subscribe. Facebook, like. Do whatever that is to engage. Make sure you get this content each and every day.
And also, we've got the last segment coming up. We're going to take your phone calls. We've got calls on hold, so stay on hold. We're going to get to you right after the break. Also, if you want to talk to us about any of this, how does this? What do you think is going to happen in the Hunter Biden thing? What do you think should happen? How does it affect your thoughts on the election? 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. And don't forget, support the ACLJ at aclj.org.
If you've got a question for us, you have to get it right now. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We are following closely what's happened in the Supreme Court. The affirmative action case, which we filed into, expecting that very soon out of the Supreme Court, tomorrow, Friday, potentially as well. But there's another case yesterday that's got some attention, and we've got a call on that, and we want to explain too. If you've got a question for us, get them in now. 1-800-684-3110. Or you want to weigh in on this latest Hunter Biden news. Don out of California on line two. Hey, Don.
Hi, fellas. Oh, man, great show. Great. I'm a proud card-carrying member, so you're the best. I have a question on this Supreme Court decision, you know, the independent legislature theory or whatever they call it. And I was wondering how it relates. I was wondering your opinion, because you guys are the experts, on the whole dispute between what Mike Pence should have done and shouldn't have done, you know, as was he just a ceremonial role as VP or as president of the Senate? Did he have the authority to send back the electors? And if he had, what would have happened? I'm curious to hear you guys' opinion on that.
Well, let me start with the did Mike Pence, as the vice president and as the president of the Senate, have the authority to send them back? The answer to that, in my view, is no. That the role of the vice president when he's sitting as a member, as the president, presiding officer of the Electoral College count, is to make sure the envelopes are open, to make sure that they are the official delegate, the electors from the states, and that's it. He, if not, any vice president could say, I'm not going to certify this election. For instance, when Joe Biden was presiding, Hillary Clinton was running against Donald Trump. Joe Biden could have said he was vice president under the theory that a vice president could do something here. I'm not, you know, she did win the majority popular vote, so I'm not going to certify this election and send it back to the states. And what this case did was a couple things. One, it said that the state Supreme Courts can review the legislative determinations for redistricting by the legislature. So they're not immune from that. But it also sent a signal that you're not going to just be able to disregard the electoral process for electoral electors for the presidency and just put in whoever the legislature then decides. They're not open to that either.
Yeah, it's interesting because up until recently, most of the states in the Southeast, the redistricting went through DOJ.
Right.
And so I think this is also a new issue because I think it was out in North Carolina where these states, some of that's been lifted,
right,
the review. And so it used to be the federal government decided if your redistricting was okay, if you were in one of the states from the Civil War era is what we're talking about, and the right. Civil Rights Movement who were, again, not abiding by the Voting Rights Act or the Civil Rights Act. And so DOJ came in and said, okay, when you redistrict for these federal offices, we're going to have to review it. Now the states are having to deal with this on their own in these southeastern states. And so it's maybe, like you said, the first time in this case, it was the North Carolina Supreme Court stepping in and saying, this map does not meet our laws.
I think what's interesting here is you're going to have the Supreme Court issue its final decisions probably Thursday and Friday. That includes the issue of admissions based on race.
Yep.
So the whole affirmative action issue. It includes the
creative kind of backwards affirmative action issue, really.
Yeah. You've got the issue involving does the artist that's doing a website design have to do it for individuals she disagrees with because of sexual orientation, whatever it might be. That case is up for like this, that issue for the like second time in 5 years. So it'll be interesting to see how these all come out. Having said that, okay, the Supreme Court has issued fairly conservative rulings this year, but not always. But here's the point I wanted to make. That whole independent elector theory, which was part of this investigation of the January 6th committee, this, you know, idea that they were going to have these state electors, three justices of the Supreme Court thought that that argument at least deserved to be heard. And so I think it makes it hard pressed for a prosecutor to then prosecute lawyers for advocating the position that three justices of the Supreme Court said is at least plausible.
I mean, we've been advocating way before Roe versus Wade was overturned that Roe versus Wade was wrong. Does that make you a criminal?
No, but that's where, I mean, that's where some of this stuff has gotten truly out of hand. But I want to go back to something Logan said earlier, and that is this. We've got a very broad mission and mandate at the ACLJ. We handle so many issues on so many cases. What's happening in the schools? What's happening on the life issue? I mean, I can go on and on. Economic issues, international global issues, Israel, advocacy at the European Court of Human Rights, advocacy at the United Nations. It's a very broad-based organization. So what's happening is the political issue is becoming this. We used to have political seasons. This is an election year. Now it seems like that never stops.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the media is largely responsible for that because they know the ratings go up. Yeah, the top news ratings are during election seasons because that's when people tune in, or big breaking news items, big wars happening, that kind of thing, moments. But how can they suck you in? They can suck you in by creating this kind of nonstop political news that is 24/7, that is more information than you, than not only do you need, it's not even a lot of times accurate information. And we have to figure out a way to kind of balance that in our own lives, because it can become overwhelming and people get fatigued by it. People get stressed by it. You know, people talk about the Trump derangement syndrome. Well, a lot of that comes from the fact that people are pounded with it all day long and have been for years and years and years. And eventually what happens to a lot of your friends, they go, well, I turn it off. I'm never turning it back on. Whether that's true or not, they say that a lot. You've seen that in the comments. People watching this show right now are saying, I turn off the news. Well, of course you're getting it from us as well. So that's, you know, partially true. Because you're turning off maybe the mainstream news and you're going, okay, I'm going to pick an hour out of my day to take a look at this. But that's not how people are right now. It's not the way they want it to be. And with that becomes this sort of, I honestly think that's going to be largely responsible for why you will have it be Trump and Biden, is because you never gave the opportunity for it to be anyone else.
Do you think that's what's going to happen here, Jordan? Is it going to be at the end of this whole political process over the next 13, 14 months, is going to end up being the rematch?
If the primaries were held today, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I don't see that changing, again, unless it was a health issue. I don't think the legal issues are going to affect Donald Trump enough not to be the nominee.
And not affect Joe Biden enough.
And I don't think RFK Jr., any of these people, at the end of the day, will do enough damage.
The impact they would have is if they ran outside.
Yeah, it is an independent. It's a third party, and then you have a Ross Perot situation.
For the Democrats.
For a few percentage. I think both.
Yeah, more Democrats than Republicans, because once he comes out on the other issues more clearly, he's not going to get as much Republican vote.
Yeah, I think that that's something that they haven't really showcased yet.
Like
his website's pretty benign when you go to it.
About his positions on abortion, unless he's changed, is abortion, no limits.
No restrictions.
No,
yeah.
Nothing.
So that's not going to get a lot of Republican votes.
I would hope not.
All right, we got a comment on Rumble. This is an interesting one. Nancy Pelosi pushing for SCOTUS term limits. Hope you'll address that at some point. I'm going to address it right now. First of all, it would take a constitutional amendment. It's a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. I think it should be. They're supposed to keep the court out of politics. That's the idea. They want term limits, so they think they can have term limits so they can appoint more justices. But that's not the way the founders wanted it.
For all the people asking for term limits, for it to be Nancy Pelosi,
yes,
who's been there for, I mean, been involved in the world for how long? It's kind
She's
of
been
funny.
Up there 40 years.
I know. So, yeah. Okay, well, then we term limit you out as well. I mean, that's where it's ridiculous.
Well, they're not running for, when you're nominated to the Supreme Court, you're not running for the Supreme Court. And that's a big difference. But all of this to say, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot going on at the ACLJ. New cases coming in every day. Last week, we had 167 requests for assistance. If you need help, it's aclj.org/help. And we could, if it fits within our mandate, we will get, but, and regardless, someone will get back in touch with you immediately, aclj.org/help. And we also want Jordan people to support the work of the ACLJ.
That's right. So you go to aclj.org and you can make a financial contribution today. It's of course, important for what you see on this show and who you see on the show, but much bigger than that, all of what's going on that you don't see, the attorneys, the government affairs teams, the various offices around the country and the world. Your support goes to all of that. And bringing you this broadcast every day is part of that support as well, and the team behind that. So go to aclj.org. We encourage you to donate today. Check out the new piece up, exclusive to us, by Mike Pompeo on Iran at aclj.org. We'll follow the remaining Supreme Court cases the next couple of broadcasts on Thursday and Friday.